Hi everybody, welcome to Rob Evans 365. It's day number 1522. It's a Sunday morning, it's early. Normally, Sunday is my day of sleep in. And right now it's 8 minutes past 8 a.m. Should be in bed still, but my youngest one's in hospital. My oldest one today, she's supposed to spend the weekend with me, but she's going to the Melbourne show with her mum's sister and her family and stuff. So I had to get up early to go for that because it's in the city. And they're catching the train because it's a nightmare to try and park. So up nice and early to get her ready, and I decided, it's a nice sunny day. It's cool, it's 9 degrees, but it looks like a gorgeous day here today. AFL Grand Final yesterday, the Cats smashed the other team, the Swans, by 81 points, I think it was in the end. Huge walkover. And so my cat was very pleased with that. He's breaking for the Cats. And today, I'm heading to the gym to do a workout, come home, feed myself well, and then I've got a big leg workout today. Legs is always a big workout. Very taxing, go home, feed myself, then I'll go off to the hospital this morning to visit my youngest one, and I'll spend a few hours in there with her and come home. So I'm home for when my eldest one gets home. Being a parent can be tricky when you got one in hospital and the hospital's so far away. It does make it really, really tricky, but if I could give you a tip as a parent, it's to be as present as you can be for your kids. Making sure that, you are there for them. And I know that might sound overly simplistic, but there's a difference between my ex-wife, my daughter's mum, and me, and the way that we manage it. And part of it is just the difference between person. Some of it's difference between male and female. Men can, be more, stubborn, more selfish naturally than women. I like to try and keep a balance, but one of the things that I make sure is, because my youngest one is in hospital so much, on the days that I have an obligation with my eldest daughter, I make sure that I'm there. And so I'm not late, I'm not having her wait, I'm not handing it off to her mum to do. And I think that's really important. So like today, for instance, this weekend, that both the girls are supposed to be with me, obviously one's in hospital. The Melbourne show only comes around, once a year. So I said, this is the weekend that she can go with her, the other side of the family. And I said, that's fine. But what I make sure is that I will be home when she gets home, rather than, she gets home to an empty house, then she's got to wait for me, knowing that I'm at the hospital and stuff. And so I think it's about priority, making sure that both kids are seen as a priority. And obviously I can't spend, it's physically impossible for me to spend the time with both of them today at the same time, because they're in different locations. So I need to manage that the best that I can. So it's like, I'll do what I need to do this morning for me, for my wellness. So I'm just going to have a bit of a drink. And then I will go in to spend time with my youngest one, and then I'll come home to make sure I'm present for my oldest one. And I know that when you've got one child that's quite unwell, and it becomes really, really difficult on the other child. They feel like they can be missing out. The distress of seeing their sibling being unwell, the distress of them growing up without another, without their sibling, is also challenging. And then making sure that the other aspect is that both parents can get lost in one child being sick and you kind of forget about the other one. I try and ensure that that doesn't happen and she's supported as much as possible and that it's, you know, it's light for her so that you're not constantly talking about the illness of the other child, etc., etc. So it's certainly a very big challenge. But that's what my plan is for today. And so when you are with your kids, and I see this a lot where, you know, there isn't an unwell child, and because that's not the norm. Both, you know, all the, I might say both, but all the kids are normally with you all the time and not, you know, separated by hospital admissions and all that kind of stuff. And what can happen is, particularly when, you know, there's multiple, if I look at the last relationship I was in, my partner, she had two kids, I had two kids, that's four kids. So I go from periods of time where there are no kids because, there aren't no kids, but say my biological kids, that there can be no kids because they're with her mum, and then I, you know, would spend time with my partner with her kids, so then there's two kids. And so to go from zero kids to when they're all together at four kids, it's like, man, that's that was certainly a challenge for me, something that you know, all of a sudden your family's just grown by 50%. And making sure that you can to spend some time with each one of them, it's hard. It's just hard. And the more kids you have than that, I guess it's about finding those pockets of time where you can spend a little bit of, I think always one-on-one time with your kids is important. Obviously, the more kids you have, the less time you've got to be able to do that. But your kids will remember it. They'll value it. And even if it's only 10 minutes, you got to make sure that it's, you know, real quality time. So you're not, you know, distracted by your phone. You're not doing, you're just together, like you're sitting together, but you're actually not engaging. And I think my job as a parent is to help them grow up as both kids grow up as amazing adults, not raising kids, but raising adults. And I think there are lessons all the time. And I think about, what are the things that have happened for me in my life that have helped really progress me? And I try and pass those on to the kids. So if they're, I'm helping them, I suppose, build these library of books that, like key books that I find have really helped move me in my life. And I realize that, you know, my eldest one, she's not into reading, and either was I. But it's a question of building something for her. So at one point in her life, like for me, she'll find, yeah, I want to start reading these things. I want to engage in something else, and knowing that these are things that have really helped me. And then there are lessons. I'll give you an example in a second, but there are lessons that I think are important to get. This is my eldest one in the example I'll give you, but to give her examples of just life and how you manage yourself better and how you get out of life what it is that you want, and you don't become, I guess, just a victim to other people's thinking, and to have a voice within you to stand up and say, this is what I want, and no, I don't like that, and not just accepting because somebody has said that that's the way that it is. And so just as I take another pre-workout drink, hang on. I'm sitting in the gym car park about to go in. Sunday morning. There's hardly anyone in here. So the example was, it's to do with where she is today at the show. And her mum, my ex-wife, is, like, she's a very, very loving person, but she tries to please everybody and ends up, you know, disappointing a lot of people. And the kids are noticing that, particularly my oldest one. So, for instance, what will happen is, and I mean this in no disrespect, I mean, she's got a lot of skills that I just don't have. This isn't a criticism, it's just an observation, because we're all different. Because people could look at me and say, well, you know, you don't spend enough time here, or you don't do that, or you don't do whatever. We do it in our own way. And so there will be instances where, like, she'll get up in the morning while my oldest daughter is sleeping, she'll go to the hospital, and she'll say, yeah, I'll be back at this time. But then it blows out by hours, and my eldest one is at home, she's doing stuff, and it's like late afternoon, or, you know, that deep into the middle of the afternoon. And then her mum comes home, and there's always an excuse, you know, there's always, oh, well, this was delayed, and I wanted to stay and wait for this, and blah, blah, blah. And so often she feels like she's, you know, when she uses the word ditch, that I've been ditched. And so when it came to the show yesterday, I think the discussion came up a couple of days, the show's today, and her mum said, you know, her auntie, so her mum's sister, and her family were going to go to the show. She was going to get my daughter to go with her auntie while she went to the hospital. And I'm like, as soon as I heard that, I thought, why? You know, why are you doing that? Because what is that? What's that message that sends to, you know, my oldest daughter? It is that you're not a priority. You've got other people to go with, so I can go to visit her sister. And that's what she was planning to do. She said, oh, I'll get you to go with them and I'll go and visit your sister. And I'm like, oh, it's just not right. It's, you know, this is a special time. She should be with her, etc. And so I said to, when my daughter came over, so I knew the inside information, because her mum said to me, oh, I was going to go do this, but, you know, Emily said, you know, why wasn't I going with her and whatever, so I'm going with her. So I said to Emily, making out that I didn't know, I said, you know, oh, who's going to the show? And then she said, oh, you know, going with the auntie and whatever. And she said, oh, mum wasn't going to come. And I said, oh, okay. And I said, so what's happening now? And she said, oh, yeah, she said she's going to come. And, yeah, she said, you know, a few more things and whatever. And I thought, okay, this is an opportunity for me to talk about with her how it's important for her to, you know, have a voice for what it is that she wants. And I said, yeah, I said, Jen, you need to remember that, you know, it's important for you to ask for what it is that you want. And I said, yeah, I agree with you. I said, mum should be with you and not just, you know, leave you with her sister because it's convenient to do. And I said, that's, you know, really well done of you to speak up when you, you know, you weren't happy with that. And it's good that mum's coming along now. And I said, you know, you just need to remember that mum doesn't always think about the bigger picture. So, you know, sometimes you just need to remind her that, you know, you want to do things with her and so forth. And, you know, there's a little lesson in that for her, and making sure that she does continue to remember that she has a voice and not just allow things to happen for her. And I think if she can grasp that at this age, then she will continue to keep practicing that, so that when she's in relationships and so forth, she doesn't just become a silent partner and have somebody else walk all over her, and she ends up not getting what she wants and the partner ends up getting what they want, and she gets to the point where she's really disgruntled and ends up leaving the relationship. You've got to be able to have relationships with all types of relationships with people, and making sure that you're getting what you need out of the relationship at the same time. You know, you're not there to be a doormat. And most of us don't ask for things. Most of us don't. Most of us just accept what happens around us and being disgruntled. And this is particularly true in intimate relationships, where people don't ask for what it is that they really want. Or if they do... So I've got a, another example. I've got a young client, and she has a partner that has his own business. They've got two kids, young kids, babe, like a toddler, and I don't know, like 5-year-old, something like that, 4 or 5-year-old. And she feels like she needs to always just do what he wants because it's his money, etc., etc. And I said, yeah, look, I understand how you can get trapped in that thinking, but you need to realize that, yes, he might be earning the money, but this is a partnership. And you're doing probably the harder part in being the mum with the kids full time. So I said, so many people couldn't do that. So many men, for sure, couldn't do that. And I said, the unfortunate part is it's just not paid. You know, you don't get a salary for that. But you are in a partnership with your partner so that, yes, they go off and have the freedom to do their work and build their career and business and all that kind of stuff. And unfortunately, you get stuck at home looking after the kids. And even though there's beautiful parts of that, you get to miss out on a lot of things. And I'm trying to teach her to have a voice for herself. And not to cause friction with her partner, but to make sure that she doesn't get lost in it. Because I said, that's not normal for just one person to get everything that they want. And so she's constantly having to reschedule and cancel her coaching sessions with me because it doesn't suit the partner. And even though he's supportive when, you know, she goes, there are too many other things that come up which are like, well, no, she can't go because she's got to support him in doing something. And she just accepts that because, oh, well, you know, he's busy at work and whatever. And so you can't be like that. You know, you've got to be able to make sure that you get what you want to, because ultimately it ends in demise. Okay? You can do it for years and years and years, and then you just become very, very unhappy. I'm working with a client at the moment where she's come out of a really bad relationship, and she has, I think she's in her 50s now, and she's doing really well. She's only just started. She's doing really well with how she's, you know, transforming her health and habits and mindset and everything. Like, it's superb to watch. And I just said to her in the last session, she's telling me, you know, more and more about, you know, what's been going on for her. And, you know, she was really restricted in what it was that she was able to do when she was in the relationship. And I said, don't you feel like now you're just starting to live? And she said, absolutely. She said, that's exactly how it feels. And that's taken her to be in her 50s to feel like she's starting to live. You know, that's a long time, right? But at least now she's starting to live. So what if, and then, so I look at all these experiences from people as well as my own and say, well, what are the key aspects of what I've learned that I can pass on to my kids? Because if we can, I think the greatest gift, rather than money, passing on money to the kids, some people talk about generational wealth. I don't like that idea, because you just give your kids a whole, you know, dump truck full of money. They don't respect it. They haven't earned it. They can't relate to it. It doesn't make them better people. It gives them greater experiences, but doesn't make them better people. I want to make them better people so that they can make their own success and their own money. And so the greatest gift for me is about giving them knowledge and wisdom and, you know, morals, beliefs, ethics, that kind of thing for them to ultimately live a great life, because they can have all the money in the world and be horrible people. But if we can teach them to get what they want out of life, doing what they are passionate about and are excited about in a way that supports and builds people up as opposed to cutting people down, then for me, that's been a success as a father. And I believe that I had a number of gifts passed on to me by my parents, mainly from my mum, because I spent more time with mum. And I think mum was more like me in terms of the way I communicate with people, whereas dad was just, you know, just a quieter man. And I probably get my patience and calmness from him, because mum was a bit on the crazy side from that perspective. But I think we can all take things away from, you know, what we've had in our experiences and backgrounds and pass it on to the kids. And it's a concentrated effort. So I'm very focused on, what do I do every single day to make myself better? How can I grow? How can I keep learning? What coaching can I invest in to make myself even better? I have like a beautiful house. I love my house. My car is it's 2022 at the time of recording this. My car is 2009. I'm sitting in it right now. I treat it like a new car. In fact, one of the things that's important for me is, so I've got sign writing on my car. It's about keeping the brand clean, right? I believe that the way that I present myself physically, like from a grooming perspective, as well as how I maintain my health and so forth, so how I look. If people are coming to me for health and wellness services and they see that I look like a bit of a slob, I'm messy, I'm overweight, unenergetic, eating poor food, they come in, say for a session, and let's say I'm eating chips or I'm eating, chocolate bars and things like that, then that's not setting a great example, is it? They're like, well, how am I becoming a better person by watching what you're doing? Or you're telling me to do this, but you're not doing it. So I don't believe in that. And so when it comes to everything that I do, that my studio is immaculate, the entranceway is immaculate, the garden outside my studio is immaculate. I keep the brand nice and clean. I keep the car clean inside and out. Like I say, it's 2009. It's the only new car that I've ever had. And I've done, I think it's about 200, actually, let me look at the thing up here. Yeah, I just did 225,000 K. So my next service is 250. If I don't have any issues with the car, I will hold on to it till probably 500,000 Ks. So I've done that in, I do less driving now than I used to when I first got it. So 2009 to now, what's that, 13 years. So I could have the car for 26 years. I'm perfectly happy with that. Having a new car every couple of years does not impress me. I see cars really as a waste of money. It's a massive premium we pay for convenience. If you think about it, we invest all this money in a car for it to do nothing 95% of the time, probably. It just sits in the driveway or in your garage or whatever. So I figure that's not a good use of money. We're paying a massive amount of money for convenience. Anyway, so I don't like to spend, I could drive a $200,000 motor vehicle or more if I wanted to, but that's not value for money. So I'd rather take the extra money and invest it in me. So I don't buy a lot of things. I have a very basic kind of living. I invest in my food because that goes into me to help me be a better person. My house furniture is very basic. Like the day that it comes for me to have to sell the house, I'll probably need to, apart from a bedroom furniture because that's more modern, I probably need to remove every item of furniture in the house and have it professionally staged to make it look more modern and more appropriate for the house. I don't need it, so I don't do it. I live very comfortably. I don't spend a lot of money on clothes. Like most of the time, I'm either wearing I invest in suits, like tailored suits. But again, I go value for money. For FYI, I shop at Oxford, oxford.com.au. And they have some shops in the big shopping centres as well. I had some professional services, probably 10 years ago now. Probably about 12 years ago, where I engaged the services of a professional stylist. And they helped me understand how I should dress. And we went into Oxford. And ever since that day, I've gone back to them because they're, you can buy two suits for $500, for instance, and they are such good quality. And then I invest in good ties, and then my coach, he's got a silk tie company in the ties. I always get comments on my ties. And so I invest in those and good quality shirts and everything, good quality shoes, so that you show up looking like you're worth $5 million. And the rest of the time, I'm really in casual, like sports attire, because I'm either working out or I'm working with people in my studio, dressed in my uniform. That's how I spend most of the time in my clothes. So I don't have a need to, like, I don't like going out and fancy. So I have one pair of jeans, actually a denim pair of jeans, and I've got a black pair of jeans that I wear if I do go out in a casual sense. But I hate wearing them. I find them so uncomfortable. So I just don't go out that often. I spend most of the time investing in myself. And COVID's taught us we can do that from home. We don't need to go out and, you know, do all those things. But that's just me. And so investing in me to become a better person so that I can then learn from that, help connect better with people, add value to people, and then take all of that and give the best bits to my kids as well to make them better. That's what's important for me. Anyway, some of that was a bit deep this morning. A bit of an insight into how I like to, you know, live with my kids. I think if you just keep working on it, stay focused on making you better first. Because if you're broken, you can't make your kids better, right? So you got to keep working on you to make you better. And let's just, yeah, do what we can to make our kids better people as well. Because there's certainly, I'm sure our parents had similar concerns about us. Each generation is different. I mean, we're living in a very unique time right now. I do believe that many parts of history are repeating themselves and will. And I think the next few years are going to be very different for us economically wise. I think it's going to take us a few years to get back to normal. We need unemployment to go right up, ironically, to help improve the economy and interest rates and that kind of stuff. It's like it's slanted the other way at the moment. It's a really, really interesting time. I've lost the other thought that I was about to say there, but continue to improve. Just keep working on yourself. Stay healthy, stay happy. Go do a workout today. See you tomorrow.